The Treasury Star Parade. Produced under the personal direction of William A. Bacher, with David Brookman and the Treasury Orchestra, and starring Mr. Canada Lee in Violet Atkins' radio adaptation of the dramatic and moving document from the American magazine of Lieutenant Charles H. DeBow of the United States Army, one of the first Negroes ever commissioned in Uncle Sam's Air Force.
I got wings. Wings to blast the enemy German or jam. It's all the same to me. This is it. That motor sure sounds swell as it roars like a thousand thunderstorms. I swing the ship on the concrete runway for the takeoff. Faster, faster. Hangar splash past. At first, it's as bumpy as riding in a jalopy with one flat tire. Then the never-failing miracle. The bumps smooth off. We're in the air. Out of the world. Free! Upstairs, at 2,000 feet, I look down at the Tuskegee Army Flying School, where nearly 50 Negro officers and 1,000 enlisted men are working like industrious ants to make a success of the first Army Aviation Post for Negroes. I'm one of the pioneer class. There were 13 of us to begin with, but 8 got washed out, and that left 5. And we all got our wings together. Those bright, shining, silver wings that had never before been awarded to any of our people. I've got wings! And way down below on the red clay of Alabama, dotted with the corn and cotton fields, tiny knots of people, my people, look up from their work and wave at me. Maybe there's hunger in them, too, the way there was in me. Maybe among them there's a kid with big, dark, dreaming eyes, watching planes wheeling in the blue sky. A hard ache in his stomach, and maybe a harder one in his heart, the way I used to.
I want to fly. I want wings.
Charles, what you doing, child?
Watching the airplanes, Ma. I gotta fly someday, Ma.
I told you a million times, Charles, honey. You got as much chance becoming a flyer as I got owning the department store where I work. Oh, but I got no right to stop you wanting it, child. You go on dreaming. Ain't nobody can take that away from you.
No, nobody could take that away from me. Flying was a symbol of liberation, emancipation from crowded streets and crowded rooms. I kept hoping, dreaming, working.
Morning paper, sir. Paper mill. Here she goes, the automatic.
Soda? Black and white? Frappe?
I could see the heartache in Mom's soft eyes as I gave her part of my earnings and put the rest away for that dream. I knew what she was thinking, though she never spoke to me about it again.
Don't break your heart on that dream.
But the dream grew, with its roots so deep inside me I couldn't tear them out. I didn't want to. I'm an American. I belong to America. I want to give America all I am, everything I may become. I want to fly for America. I ate, slept, and lived that hope. In every book I studied, it was a shadow behind the words, throwing everything else into relief. My dad wanted me to become a doctor.
White or colored, there's always need for doctors, son.
But I knew after 2 years of pre-medical training that I wasn't cut out for a doctor. And when the Civil Aeronautics Authority started a unit at Hampton Institute in Virginia, I was one of 300 who signed up overnight. A lot were eliminated by the tough physical exam, and others because their folks wouldn't consent. But not Mom and Dad.
Go ahead, son. It's what you always wanted to do. Try your wings.
Go ahead, but be careful.
I was in 17th heaven until I took my first flight. And that training ship looked mighty flimsy to me just then. When my instructor, Charles Barclay, took me up for an observation ride, I felt as if I'd been cheating myself all my life. Where was that sense of liberation I'd been dreaming about? All I felt was anxiety and a mighty sense of relief when we touched the ground. Barclay looked at me keenly.
Like it, Charles?
Not particularly, sir.
Well, maybe you haven't got what it takes, Charles.
The words were like a fist below the belt. Not got what it takes? I had to have what it takes. I had to fly. On the next flight, I fought to relax. That sounds funny, but it's exactly what I did. Fought with every muscle of my body, in every cell in my brain. All the voices of my dream. My mother's wishes for me. My father's kindly skepticisms. Barclay's words mingled with the sound of the motor as the ship took to the air.
Go ahead, son. Try your wings.
Maybe you haven't got what it takes. Go ahead, but be careful. What it takes.
Try your wings.
I've got to have wings.
What it takes. Be careful.
Go ahead, son. Try your wings.
I haven't got what it takes.
Go ahead,
I've got to have wings. I've got to
try your wings.
And then suddenly, it happened. The voices stopped. All I heard was the steady roar of the motors and the steady, steady beat of my heart. When Barclay said...
Ready to feel her out, Charles?
Ready? I put my hands tentatively on the controls. The way Mom used to put her hand on the stove to see if it was hot enough. The ship tilted sharply to one side. A shiver shot through me. A shiver of exultation and pride. I wasn't afraid or unsure anymore, because that ship was tilting by my hand. Man alive, I was flying! I was flying! I was flying, and I was going to keep on flying. When I got home that summer, I told Mom and Dad I wasn't going back to school. Their faces were shocked and grieved.
After all your work and study, child.
Mother, Dad, listen. Look, I've chosen my job for the rest of my life. It's the only thing I've ever wanted to do, and I'm doing it. I pick up the 35 solo hours I need for my private pilot's license. In the next 12 months, I've got to get in 15 hours of private flying to keep that license. 15 hours of flying at $7 an hour is $105. Oh, I can't swing that in my school expenses, too. And I want to fly more than anything else in the whole world.
If you go back to school, Charles, I'll give you the $200 I've saved up. And I'll send you another $400. Not all at once, I haven't got it. But every week a little. Please, Charles.
I could have kissed the ground they walked on for their goodness to me. But I couldn't take that money. I knew what they'd saved it for. The first vacation they would ever have had in their lives. I wasn't going to rob them of that. I went to Chicago and landed a job as an oven operator in a steel manufacturing plant. It was hot work, but it paid $30 a week. And that meant I could buy those flying hours and keep my license. And then, one lunch hour, somebody read a piece of news in the paper.
The War Department says our applications will be accepted for the Air Force.
That night, I wrote a letter to the War Department and breathed a prayer over it. I had flying training, but could I get an appointment? When the answer came, my hand shook so I could hardly open it. The letter was brief, formal, and thrilling.
You are appointed to the first class of Negro cadets. Report to Tuskegee.
13 of us reporting. 13 pioneers. Every one of us a symbol for the millions of our people all over America. People who were counting on us to come through. Each one of us that failed, failed for all of us. Yet, 7 did fail. When that fatal December 7th dawned at Pearl Harbor, there were only 6 of us who stood looking at the news. 6 of us who looked at each other with the same grim thought in our minds.
We've got to come through. So we'll get our chance to do the same thing to Tokyo that those damn Japs did to Pearl Harbor.
We've got to come through. We've got to get out of here. 5 of us came through. 5 of us got our wings. And Mom and Dad came down for the ceremony. Oh, it was a great day for them. Afterwards, we had a 10-day furlough and, well, I went back with them on the train to Indianapolis. I'll never forget that ride. Dad kept finding an excuse to walk down the aisle to the water cooler. On the way back to our seats, he'd find an excuse to start a conversation with somebody, anybody, about those colored boys who just got their wings at Tuskegee. And then he'd add casually, as if it had just occurred to him.
Hey, you know, there's one of them right here in this here car.
And then he'd point to me and say,
there, that's Lieutenant DeBoer. Now, he's my boy.
I wanted to tell him to lay off, but... Well, Mom put a hand on my shoulder.
Don't spoil it for him, Charles. He's so proud he can't keep it all to himself. You know, this is a big day for him, too.
Yes, a big day. A big day for all of us. 5 of us had proved we could fly. And one of the five showed the stuff he was made of a few weeks later. Mac Ross and I were flying a tight formation at 6,000 feet. I noticed smoke wisping out of his engine. He signaled me to loosen up the formation so I'd be clear of danger. I radioed the field. The smoke became a black cloud. Jump, you fool! Jump, I was shouting. But he couldn't hear me. I couldn't hear my own voice. Mac stuck with his ship. 5,000 feet, 4,000 feet. He was fighting to get back to the field, bring the ship in without cracking it up. I kept swearing, you kill yourself, jump! But Mac waited until 3,000 feet before he jumped. I dived alongside and radioed the field where he landed. They picked him up, trudging along a dirt road. His silk over his shoulders, worried sick about his plane.
Oh, maybe I did something wrong. Maybe I could have brought her in safe, Chuck.
Listen, pal, do you realize that you're the first colored member of the Caterpillar Club?
I realize I've wrecked a ship worth thousands of dollars. Maybe they'll start saying us fellas can't fly.
He needn't have worried. The official report put him in the clear and renewed his faith in himself. It was faulty material, not faulty flying. We've proved we can fly. And we're proving how well our instructors taught us by teaching other boys like us to get their wings. Helping them realize their dreams of flying for Uncle Sam. Helping them give the right answers when somebody asks them. As I was asked in Montgomery the other day.
You one of those new colored flyers over at Tuskegee?
Yes, sir.
Now tell me one thing. What do you boys want to fly for anyhow?
I looked at him. But I didn't see him. Beyond him, I was seeing my own reasons for wanting to fly. 12 million of them. My own people. How can you say to a stranger the things you couldn't even voice to your own parents, close as you may be to them? How can you say as I wanted to, Mister, there they stand. 12 million patient, enduring, simple people who know I'm their symbol of freedom. I'm flying for them, see? For each of them. And I'm flying for my mother and father, two more simple, enduring people who sacrificed their own dreams for me so that I might realize mine. And, mister, I'm flying for that man who sits in eternal silence in his memorial in Washington, the man who gave us our freedom. I'm flying for that freedom, mister. We're in a war for the future. And I want no part of a fascist future. Our democracy isn't perfect, but it's the only system that opens the way to perfection. And it's fine enough for me to want to save it, great enough for me to want to see it grow greater, and worthwhile enough for me to want to fly to hell for it, if it can be saved that way. Maybe tomorrow, maybe months from tomorrow, I may be shipped off for combat duty, east or west, I don't care which. So long as I can help protect this way of life. I got wings. Wings to blast the enemy, German or Jap. It's all the same to me. I got wings to keep our air, our world free.
Free. Freedom for himself. Freedom for all his people, but more. Freedom for the country he loves better than anything in the world. How much do you love your country? How hard are you willing to work and fight to preserve your freedom? How much are you willing to save your country? Your war bond quota call is 10%. Are you meeting it? How much more than 10% can you give to buy war bonds and war-saving stamps? Top your 10% by New Year's. Then top that after the New Year and keep topping it until we win this war. Remember, 10% or more of every dollar you earn must go into war savings bonds and stamps. This is your country. Keep it yours.